Copper Shores Community Health Foundation is proud to introduce you to Do Good Volunteer of the Month, Doug Haar. Doug volunteers hundreds of hours each race season. He is the voice and the face of Copper Dog. He is selfless with his time. He makes the time necessary to guide and teach so that the Copper Dog continues to grow as an organization and a world-class event. If you know an incredible volunteer like Doug, go to coppershores.org/dogood and nominate them to be recognized as the next Do Good in the Copper Country Volunteer of the Month.
Once again, good Sunday morning, and welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Copper Shores Community Health Foundation, online at coppershores.org. They say there are only two seasons in Michigan, winter and road construction. This year, the two have actually kind of mixed together a little bit, and so I thought we'd kind of get a look back at this crazy winter from Kevin Haryu from the Houghton County Road Commission, and also take a look, Kevin, what's coming up this summer in regards to some of the projects that you have planned. So welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
The winter, I've never seen anything like this. People who've been around here a lot longer than I have never seen anything like this.
And that's the same for me. I don't recall seeing a winter like this. The frost only went about as half as deep as it normally does. Of course, we had an early weight restriction, which is a big burden on all the commercial traffic because the weight reduction is 35%. It is saving some money. Typically, we spend about $2.2 million a year moving snow. We're approximately about $800,000 less than that, which will enable us to do a little more work this summer.
But you might have more work to do this summer because the road limits, the frost comes and goes. And it's got to be maddening to figure out when you put those restrictions on. I know it was very early. And when you take them off.
Yeah, it's frustrating for all sites because we understand, especially like the timber industry is very important to the area. So we only want to put them on when we have to put them on. We use actually a federal highway formula to determine that. And that's how they're put on. And it's usually pretty accurate within a day or two, and it's based on the forecast. So we're only as good as the forecast, and we know in the Copper Country it's hard to predict being so close to the lake.
For those who really aren't familiar with this, why do you need the load restrictions?
To protect the pavement. Our average thickness of pavement is anywhere between 3 and 2 inches. What happens is the pavement heats up and the subbase underneath it starts thawing out. So there's a lot of water and there's ice beneath that. So it's kind of like a waterbed. The water can't escape because it's surrounded by ice underneath it. So if you don't put restrictions on, it can't support the weight of heavy trucks. So that's why there's a 35% reduction to try to keep the damage to a minimum. We still see damage even with restrictions on, though.
Yeah, I certainly have been standing along roads and watched trucks go by and buses and things like that and seen the pavement bend and flex and break underneath the tires. So it's a real thing.
Yes, and it's not just unique to here. I mean, it's, you know, throughout the country that, you know, has freezing temperatures, they experience the same thing. So
and are we still under the road restrictions at this point?
Yes, we are. We monitor them very closely. If we would have continued to have that warm weather like we were having until the last storm and another storm coming here in the near future, hopefully things would have dried up a little bit so we could have lifted some of the roads, but it kind of like put everything back probably a week or two.
Yeah, so you'll be keeping an eye on that. And your restrictions are different from the restrictions that are imposed on state highways.
That's correct. Their roads are built, you know, a lot more, they're more expensive roads to build because they're meant for a lot higher traffics and commercial traffic. Like I said, whereas our pavements are 3 to 2 inches. I mean, they could have 8-inch thick blacktop, possibly even concrete underneath that. So,
and probably invest a lot more in substructure and the roadbeds are wider. So that probably helps them too.
Correct. You know, our typical mile of road costs between $300,000 and $400,000 to replace. And theirs is probably triple that.
Yeah, and we've seen a fair amount of road construction on their highways over recent years. And a lot of it that I've noticed over the last couple of years has been more significant than what I saw earlier. Earlier, they were just kind of grinding and recovering. And the last summer, I saw a lot more full tearing out and replacement, which probably is a much better investment in the long run.
Yes, and MDOT took out road bonding. That was just spent on trunk line, not on any of the local roads. Funding isn't always an issue for us because we typically pave maybe 2 miles of road. We should be doing over 12 miles of road to keep up with a 25-year life cycle. As bad as the Father's Day flood was, it did give the road commission a loan over $46 million in repairs, which would have never happened without that event. And that's still ongoing. We still have one project for the Ripley Creek that we still have not received approval to even start any improvements from FEMA, and that's a $5.1 million job.
So we're not done with it yet. Good heavens. The road north of Chassel got done last summer.
That's correct. And a problem that we have with that is being reimbursed because there's a lot of the projects that are completed, Lower Massey being one of them that was completed last year. We haven't received final payment yet. So we kind of wind up being like a banker. And unfortunately, then we can't perform other projects because we weren't reimbursed yet.
Yeah, it basically means that you have to pay out money that you don't have to get this project done, hoping that eventually the money will come back in from the federal government.
That's correct. And sometimes those reimbursements take over a year. So it's really hard to plan for, especially with our winters. We're fortunate to have a light winter this year because that gives us a little more cushion with the money that we have spent out on these other projects.
What kind of savings do you get from a winter such as this? I would assume fuel?
Yes, fuel, materials, but we still keep our employees busy. They're out, you know, doing some brushing, pothole patching. A lot of our operators are actually very good at doing routine maintenance on our equipment, so it gives us time to catch up on a lot of that. So they've been keeping busy, even though they're not plowing.
And wear and tear on the vehicles, I assume a little bit less. Maybe you can squeeze another year out of something?
Yes, that also helps, just like on, you know, any other vehicle, like personal vehicles even. If you don't use them as hard as, you know, we do for moving snow, it does make it a lot easier on the equipment.
Yeah, certainly pothole season started a little bit earlier back in February when we had that warm-up. And then you go out and you fix the potholes, but it's not warm enough to use that good hot patch. So you put the cold patch in, and the next time you plow it, it pretty much comes out.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it's really hard, especially on your high traffic roads, to keep the cold patch in place. We try our best to do it, but it's frustrating at times because, you know, a lot of times you're putting that cold patch in a hole that has a lot of moisture in it still, or it's wet actually. And it doesn't hold very long.
Yeah, it's not like you can dry that out and prep it to put that cold patch in. You can take a hair dryer and whoosh it out, dry it all up, put a little primer on it, something like that. It's a fly by night as you go by repair.
Yeah, so we try to keep up with them as best we can. I mean, some roads are a lot worse than others, but we try our best, and you know, a lot of time that, you know, the people are best advocates to let us know where all those potholes are, because they'll call our office and let us know.
I'm sure they do. please, and it's not that you mind being called, but be kind.
Correct. Yeah, we're trying our best with what we have and trying to make it all, you know, safe for all the motoring public. And we understand that there's potholes out there and spring breakup. Unfortunately, we see them everywhere. And then when we have weird winters like we had this year, a lot of times we'll have roadways that historically have never broken up all of a sudden be some of the worst roads in the county.
That thaw that we had in February, that warm stretch that we had there, and then back to freezing again, does that cause extra stress on those roads?
Yes, sometimes it pushes the ice down lower, or sometimes water actually gets trapped between two layers of ice, which just, it makes it worse because it just moves differently, and the pavement can't handle to flex that much in the cold weather.
Well, I suppose that's something that folks don't understand. Ground freezes from the top down. It does not thaw in reverse from the bottom up. It thaws from the top down as well. So even if the dirt it seems thawed, there could be still 2-3 feet of ice underneath it.
That's correct. You know, I mean, in an average year, we have ice, you know, the frost line is down 70 inches approximately. So if, say, the top foot and a half thaws out, it has nowhere to go because it's sitting on a bed of ice. And that's the problem, like I mentioned earlier, is it's almost like a waterbed effect where that equipment is just too heavy for that pavement to support it when it has such a soft, essentially water base underneath it.
That's why my basement leaks.
Correct.
You know, it rains in the spring. The top of the lawn has thawed out, so it soaks into that. But eventually it goes down 2 or 3 feet. There's still ice down there. It all puddles up and it comes in through my basement. So,
yep, same principle.
So same principle there. Talking with Kevin Haryu from the Houghton County Road Commission, the money that you did save this winter, as you said, could go into a little bit of extra work this summer then.
Yes, like it said, what we do in the summer is we have to keep the road safe for the motoring public all winter long. So if we have a bad winter, we do less in the summer. And if we have a lighter winter like this year so far, we are able to do more projects. We have several projects scheduled throughout the local townships. And that'll enable us to have money to put towards those.
How does the structure work? I think people don't necessarily understand how the structure works. You work with the Road Commission, the Houghton County Road Commission, which is part of Houghton County, but not under the Board of Commissioners.
That's correct. We're a different legal entity from the county government. The county board does appoint the Road Commission board members. And that's pretty much the only connection between the two.
Where does your funding come from?
A majority of it comes from what they call MTF revenues, which is essentially the state gas tax. We do also get part of the federal gas tax, about $1 million, and that to do projects on our federal aid system, which would be our primary roads, say like your Chassel-Painesdale Road.
I've got to catch up with our legislators on this. We've talked over the years about the need to change Michigan's revenue program as more electric vehicles go out. Electric vehicles don't pay any gas tax.
Yeah, they pay through their in their registration. However, they are looking at that. One of the biggest ones that they keep looking at are miles traveled. But you'd have to try to retrofit old vehicles. I don't know how that would be accomplished, but that keeps getting thrown out there. But yes, that is an issue with electric vehicles.
And they're talking about toll roads, toll highways downstate. Fortunately, not in our neighborhood.
You're correct.
I can't see putting toll booths along US 41 in Chassel. That just
I don't see those working up here.
No. But downstate, it's not out of the realm of possibility that I-94, I-96, I-75 from, say, Gaylord or Houghton Lake South may have those little structures built over them like they have in Chicago. And you'll get an I-pass and you'll pass under and you'll pay as you go.
Yeah, and that would be frustrating for the rural areas like us because that would solve probably their funding in the, you know, big urban areas in lower Michigan. However, then it would be harder to get more revenue for the UP.
Is that something they're talking about? If they put the toll roads along I-94, that money would be used for I-94 in those counties in southern Michigan and none of it kicked back up here?
That's correct. In the current distribution formula through Act 51, it takes into account that everyone uses the roads. You still have to get from point A to point B. A lot of people from lower Michigan come up, for example, to snowmobile up in this area. So they use all of our roads. So currently the state gas tax gets distributed not only on road mileage, but on population. So it is a fair way to distribute the funds. And I think the toll booths, if there was a lot of them in lower Michigan, would be detrimental to get more funding for the UP.
Yeah, I guess that would be fair. If they're driving back and forth between Detroit and Chicago, probably best to invest the money there, but still it could hurt us. And heaven knows it's not like we're swimming in road funds these days.
That's correct. I mean, it's unfortunately the whole road system, especially in rural areas, it's underfunded. Like I said, an average lifespan of a road is about 25 years. We have roads out there that are 50 years old, which is amazing that they're still blacktop and not ripped up.
Yeah, I was in Kalamazoo visiting my grandson recently, and I drove over a stretch of Vine Street that I have driven over since I got my driver's license when I was 16, so 50 years ago, 50 plus years ago. And it's still the same stretch of road. And it was installed at least 70 years before I started driving over it. It's brick. And it's still there. I wouldn't want to go freeway speeds on it, but it's still there. It's still serviceable. Are we doing anything or are you seeing any progress on coming up with road construction methods or materials that might lengthen the life of our roads?
So it's it's not caught. It's.
I'm not suggesting we put brick in all roads in the Copper Country. It's a labor-intensive experience. But
for example, if we've built all the county roads to meet the specs of, say, MDOT's, the trunk lines, we wouldn't be able to do maybe a half a mile or quarter mile of a year. So we've actually been working with a geogrid that we put on our local roads. So underneath the gravel, we put a grid-like structure. It feels like plastic. And has these holes, and it locks together somewhat like a pool rack, and it's like a big snowshoe, so it helps support the loading above it. We've used that probably 15 years, and it seems to really be helping. And then we don't have to undercut the road so far, which costs a lot of money if you have to undercut the road, you know, 2 to 3 feet before you blacktop it. It saves a lot of money. So we've been using a geogrid, and it's been proven so far.
Okay, so we have made a little bit of progress at least.
Yes.
How do you then look around? Because you've got how many miles of roads in Houghton County?
850 miles.
And you get to pave how many miles basically each year?
Well, on an average year before the Father's Day flood and all those events, it was about 2 miles a year.
So now how many out of the 850, how much of that is dirt?
We have
gravel.
It's about 50-50. There's about 400 miles of paved roads in the county. There just isn't enough funding. We really count a lot on the townships. A lot of the townships, the 14 townships in the county, have road millages that they dictate to us which roads they want to repair, and they use those millage funds for that. And it works really good on the local roads. In some townships, there's a few left that do not have millages for that. And they get frustrated because we don't have the money to replace the local road. And by law, we only can spend 50% of an improvement on a local road. That's written right into the law. So even if we had the money, we couldn't do it without a partner to repair them.
Define local road.
So it would be the non-federal aid eligible roads. It would be like in your neighborhoods. There's a lot of actually collector roads that are not... not considered a primary road, there'll be a local road, and they would fall under that where we only can pay up to 50%. If you look at our county website and looked at our map, the blue routes on there would be local roads.
Okay, so give me an example, the Chassel-Painesdale Road.
So Chassel-Painesdale Road would be considered a federal aid eligible road, and we use federal gas tax to repair that. So 80% of the road repair would come from the federal gas tax, and 20% would come from the road commission. We usually don't look for assistance on those from the townships, but that's where those revenues would come from.
Okay, so then it would be the small roads that go off the Chassel-Painesdale Road or a road similar to it that would then be under the auspices locally of the townships.
That would be correct.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, because I've there is this hierarchy, and I'm not sure everybody understands it. And frankly, I'm not sure I completely understand it, because then, of course, there are also federal highways and state highways that are handled by MDOT, US 41, M26, and such.
That's correct. There are some, you know, collectors. A lot of the dead-end roads that you have, those are all local roads, even though in the country they may be several miles long. If we want to change a road from a local to a federal aid eligible, we have to get state approval. That changes all the time. I mean, we had a few roads during the flood that we thought were local roads, and we requested them to be primary roads. We were denied. I'll use Cold Dock Road for that example. The state officials came up and denied it, and then when we did the flood, so we applied it under FEMA funding. And they said, well, you can't, because now the state said that's a federal aid eligible road. So then we had to go back to federal highway and look for revenues there. So, I mean, that part is a frustrating process to determine that. But
how much of your job is fixing roads, and how much of your job is fighting red tape?
Unfortunately, a majority of my job is fighting red tape.
So what's coming up this summer? What projects do you have? And again, these are projects, county projects.
Yeah, we have quite a few projects, actually. Last year, we had that weird spring breakup, so we actually worked with Federal Highway, their ER program, which is emergency relief, and we were awarded, actually, $6.1 million for the damage that happened to the roadways last year. So we're going to fix about 1.2 million this year, just because the process we have to go through, historical review, environmental review, and such to get these projects bid. We'll do about 1.2 this year. In the following year, there's two roads that will be great to get done. We've been wanting to fix them for some time. And Jacobsville Road and the South Sydney Road will be completed the following year, not this summer. We're going to be...
Wait, you're going to do the South Sydney Road?
South Sydney Road.
That's on my way to camp.
Yeah.
That's, I've been bouncing over that for years. God bless you.
That's a long time coming.
Yeah, it has been. And you know, you get into a road like that, and it's a road that basically leads back into the Ottawa National Forest. It leads back to the Lake 13 Road, and it stops being paved at that point. So right. Is that as far as you go with it, or are you going to pave it all the way down to Iron River?
It'll be right to the county line.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we also, well, Tapiola Road, that's getting in disrepair. We're going to be going from Uncle's Corner to the Valley Road. That's about a $1 million project. We have the Bootjack Road is going to be done from M26 out to the Valley Road, and then the Valley Road over to the Gay Road. That's going to be about $750,000, and we already have about $500,000 in township work, primarily in Calumet and Portage. And it's going to be a busy summer. It's going to be a lot of work.
And but now, is this going to, this warm winter that we've had, is it going to allow you to get started a little earlier than usual?
We hope so. Like you mentioned, load restrictions went on so early. We have to abide by those load restrictions also. If we're not actively plowing, we have the same constraints where we have to have a 35% reduction on our axles. So we have to wait like everyone else. So we're just as anxious to have load restrictions come off as everybody else is.
I never thought about that affecting what you do, but that affects not only stuff you carry, you know, materials such as asphalt or sand or gravel and such, but it also affects your ability to haul heavy equipment.
Yeah, that's correct. And we're not, like I said, immune to load restrictions. I can remember probably, oh boy, it's going back 15 to 20 years ago, we actually received a load restriction violation from the state police because our plow was driving out to haul gravel to fix a gravel section of road that was breaking up and didn't have his blade down actively plowing, got pulled over on the highway and got a ticket. So
you can get away with it if you put your blade. But if there's no snow, can you still pull that off?
I was
plowing, officer. Really?
I think they would question that. But if we're actively plowing, then we can have full loads.
How many snow plows do you operate?
Well, our biggest part of our fleet, we have 11 motor graders. A motor grader, right now, they cost about $500,000 as you see them driving down the road. We have several sanders and a lot of Oshkoshes. We have Oshkoshes that are still in service from the mid 40s. I think 1946 is our oldest one that actually goes out on runs up in the Calumet area. And I think our newest Oshkosh plows, which are the big snow movers, are in the 80s. So all of our Oshkosh plows you see are very old. And when we see them come up for sale, we buy all the used ones we can find.
Yeah, so it's not like they make parts for them anymore.
No.
And your people are able to maintain this mostly, or who keeps these old beasts running?
Hats off to our employees and our mechanics and our drivers for, you know, not abusing the equipment and maintaining them. So it's a chore, I mean, because they're different.
You switched light colors a few years ago. All of a sudden, everything went green.
Yeah, there were studies that indicated that people would recognize green more so than the amber lights. There's been some confusion. You see a lot of personal vehicles driving around with green flashing lights. They're not supposed to have those. It was supposed to represent a government entity actually snow plowing.
Okay, so if I have a private plow, I can't put a green light bar on top?
That wasn't the intent of the rule, and they were supposed to be excluded, and I believe they still are.
Okay, because I find them easier to see, and I drive up to work from Launce early every morning, and I encounter a lot of plows, MDOT plows, county plows, and such that are out there. I find them easier to see, and I have appreciated that switch.
Yeah, we use both green and amber. As the amber ones break or deteriorate, we replace them with green, so that's why you'll see a mixture on our pieces of equipment still.
All right. Well, if folks have road issues or things that they'd like you to call to your attention, politely and respectfully, please, how do they do that, Kevin?
They can call our office at 482-3600 and leave a message that someone will get back to you as quickly as possible. It's usually within the same day, or if not immediately, if, you know, someone's in the office.
And a reminder, too, as we close this segment out, when you see people working along the road, whether it be county employees, city employees, state employees, contract employees, slow down, pull over, keep them safe.
That's correct. And just be patient with us. Our employees, they have families to go home to also. They're trying to fix the roads as fast as they can. And unfortunately, accidents do happen when people are on their cell phone, speeding, or just not paying attention. So I guess pay attention, stay off your cell phone, and slow down when you see those flashing lights.
Keep our people safe. Kevin Haryu, thank you.
Thank you.